Hey everyone, it's Jacqueline Melanick. Welcome to Chain Reaction, a show that unpacks and dives deep into the latest trends, drama, and news, breaking things down block by block for the crypto curious. This year, we're doing monthly series diving into different topics and themes in crypto. Last month was NFTs, and this month we're focusing on blockchains integrating AI. We're speaking to a number of founders and startups about how they're looking at the two technologies, what are the best ways to bring AI on chain, and the benefits that are yet to come from it. Hope you enjoy. Today, we have two guests on, Melody Hildebrandt, CTO of Fox Corporation, and Mike Blank, COO at Polygon Labs. Why these two companies together? Well, Polygon Labs, the layer two blockchain focused on scaling Ethereum, and Fox Corporation, the well-known media conglomerate, joined forces in January, which is something we'll dive into throughout this episode and link in the show notes. But the TLDR is Fox released Verify, an open source technical protocol for media companies to register content and grant usage rights to AI platforms, while also consumers are able to verify content through Polygon's technology. All in all, it's basically a way to help tackle the proliferation of deepfakes. And if you're lost with everything I just said, don't worry, we'll get into it shortly. But given the rise of AI and our March series focus on blockchain and AI, we thought this would be a perfect topic to discuss with these guests. With that said, Melody and Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. So I briefly touched on the partnership in the beginning, talked about a few technical things in there, but I would love to know from both of you, how did this partnership come about? Melody, when did Fox realize that deepfakes and AI were becoming a problem for news organizations? And then Mike, for non-technical users, how can you describe what Polygon's blockchain tech is doing to help solve this?
Awesome. Yeah, I think the relationship with Polygon actually kind of predates our real tackling of this specific manifestation or challenge in front of us. We kind of had an initiative a few years ago to explore blockchain as an opportunity for thinking about content distribution and content financing in kind of a fresh way. We were kind of bullish on the underlying technical potential for kind of diversifying the stream of content to a wide range of downstream providers, and Polygon and Fox began to kind of work together on that problem set. I think the moment that it really crystallized internally at Fox around the challenge of deepfakes and the challenge just of also how to think about content licensing in an age of AI, as obviously there's a big debate right now about how models are trained, the inputs into models, how content creators are compensated for their contributions to those models. I think that was really, really ChatGPT, I think, was the moment where the kind of broad zeitgeist kind of came together and we realized, okay, this is not a future problem, this is a today problem. And so we were happy to kind of already have this relationship with Polygon, like we really kind of understood the technology. And we had this immediate aha moment, I think, that we could think about blockchain provenance as a bit of a just antidote, is maybe more extreme than we need, but like as a bit of like a grounding to thinking about the input into model question and how to think about provenance and media kind of in an AI generated world.
Got it. Okay. And then Mike, where do you come into this picture?
Sure. I think just to build on what Melody was saying, both of our organizations have been at the cutting edge or at the forefront of thinking about how to use technology in order to solve interesting challenges across the media and entertainment space. Underlying what Melody's talked about is what the opportunity that blockchain provides. And Polygon technically is building an aggregated blockchain network at the scale to the level of the internet. But what does that mean in this context? It does, amongst other things, blockchain helps establish the veracity of data or the authenticity of content that is proliferating across the internet. And we're seeing today in this age of, as you described, Jacqueline, this proliferation of content. Everyone is a content producer today. Your kids, your parents, you, literally everyone. And of course, all the brands out there today are building content at a pace at which we've never seen the likes of in history. And so a blockchain enables this foundational layer, this technology that enables you to prove the veracity of that content. And so it's a natural fit for the work that Melody and Fox are doing and what we're doing to come together in order to help provide some comfort and trust in the marketplace about the content that people are consuming.
And since the launch at the beginning of the year, how has it been? Like, what have been some wins for Verify or challenges that it's still facing?
We've been really excited about the reception that it's a a market-driven solution to the problem. I think as we kind of look at this question of how are content creators compensated by large language model, by AI companies, and you're seeing these kind of extremes emerge. There's obviously very public lawsuits that are going to play out in the courts. And then there's also these kind of all-you-can-eat licensing deals where content creators are providing kind of real-time streams of all their content to AI companies for both training models as well as for more retrieval-based workflows. And then there's obviously a debate on the Hill and with legislation about like how should the government potentially step in and help navigate this environment. I think what we were trying to put out there with Verify is kind of a market-based solution to say, this is the legitimate access point for our content. We want to play in this space. We're generally AI optimists at Fox. We think there's an incredible opportunity for us to be, part to not only survive, but thrive kind of in this age of AI. But there are certain guardrails around the content that we need to impose if we kind of want to continue to have investment in journalism, investment in original content, all these primitives that you care about. There needs to be guardrails and compensation. And so I think the number one thing that's been very validating to us is, as we talked to a large number of publishers, that they want to impose these guardrails on their content. Most publishers do want to participate in this ecosystem, but they don't want to sign away all their crown jewels for a lump sum today, where you really don't know. It's a little too early, I think, to be signing away to value all your content in the age of AI right now when there's so much to play out. So how can you impose some of these technical guardrails that allow you to get ahead of that and still maintain some optionality in the future? So I think we've had a great reception from the publisher community, and we've had a great reception from, I think, the government regulatory community that, again, would rather see a market-driven solution emerge than require kind of a major heavy-handed government intervention, which, as we know, would take a long time to play out anyway, but where there's real debates about how much you want to potentially, in any way impose upon the great innovations that can happen from AI. But this is going to move so fast. You really need solutions today. So I think those are kind of the two big validations that we've found so far.
I think there's the people that want to get involved and, get into this to protect their creators, their content, et cetera, like you mentioned. But what will it take to get them on board fully while still understanding that they can, quote unquote, protect their content, as you mentioned? Like, do you see a future where more news outlets, media companies, et cetera, will integrate technology like this? Or is it going to be a slower process than kind of the proliferation of AI already has been accelerated on that point, but it might be slow on other fronts?
I'm pretty bullish it's going to move fast now because of the alternative. We kind of view this in a way as kind of like a Spotify moment or an Apple Music moment, right? Where you begin to have the legal way to consume content established, which kind of begins to put in stark relief the alternative methods of scanning the internet and scraping content. And, models had to get to where they were today, like through whatever means possible. But I think now that we're all looking at the environment and realizing that the current models really risk undermining all the economics of the internet that publishers rely upon to fund their operations, we need to carve a different way. So every publisher is looking at this and thinking about how do they want to participate. And some are saying we want out or we don't want to participate, but I think that's a minority view. But very few want this all-you-can-eat model either, because they just know you're going to get undervalued today if you try to sign a bulk deal for all your content at once, which is so much of what the AI companies want to get companies to sign right now are these kinds of deals. So I think there's going to be pretty fast movement around this, but we kind of do need to begin to coalesce a little bit, I think, if we want to seize the moment. So I see a bit of urgency around it because, again, it's beneficial to the AI companies as well, I think, to be able to have, and we've validated this in many discussions, to have the idea of a legitimate access point with a common format that allows them to ingest from thousands of publishers, with one technology, as opposed to potentially do bespoke integrations with every creator on the planet, which might be technically difficult. So we think there's a real opportunity to coalesce now around that standard, but it's going to take, I think, a few big moves from a bunch of publishers.
And I guess I would offer that I think there's a groundswell of demand as well. It's not just that I think both of us believe that it's in a brand's best interest to engender more trust in the content that they're delivering. But from an end user perspective, every day, I think there is more and more concern from actual end user consumers about the content that they're consuming and whether they can trust that content or not. If governments don't do it, then I think as Melody already suggested, it's better if there's a market-driven alternative here that we can help end user consumers understand what they're consuming is valid and authentic. And even today, we saw news, and I know this will be probably old news by the time this gets shown to the public, but the Duchess today of that presented a picture which was proven to be edited.
Right, with Princess Kate.
Now people are questioning whether that Princess Kate, whether that content was actually real or not. Why was she editing that photo? And that is such a mundane thing, right? It was just a picture of her and her children. But there are very real things that are happening across the internet today that need to be verified. And so as end user consumers, I think we have a vested interest in pushing brands as well to participate in this regard so that we can all feel as though the world that we're consuming is a real one.
What else do you two think needs to be done to improve the relationship and trust with audiences as AI continues to grow? Mike, you pointed out the Kate Middleton situation. That was definitely the talk of the town over the weekend into Monday, and we're recording this on Monday. And honestly, this episode will go out on Thursday, so maybe by then people have moved on, but there's always a situation where an AI-generated thing or something is up in the air where people are a little confused about it, or they're not 100% sure that it's legitimate. How do you see blockchains playing a role in kind of verifying that legitimacy? And then maybe Melody, you could talk to how Verify also goes that route.
Sure. Yeah, I think there are three things that blockchains can do, and maybe a fourth, which is more of an economic, more economic in nature. But there are three things that blockchains can do to help begin to solve this problem. The first is, as Melody already described, data provenance. One of the key benefits of blockchain technology is the ability to provide unparalleled data provenance, and storing data on blockchains can ensure the integrity of that data, increasing trust and transparency associated with it. And AI models that leverage large data assets can increase transparency and trust with data provenance solutions enabled by blockchains. That's one very important component. When we think about the data that's used to train the models that enable AI, like how does one know that the data models themselves were validly created and authentic in themselves and not poisoned in some way? So this is one area that blockchains can help provide a very interesting solution. A second would be zero knowledge attestations, and we call that ZK. And what that effectively means is that, you know, Polygon and others have built and invested in breakthroughs in ZK technology that allow users and applications to make privacy safe attestations that verify data and contribute to data assets used in AI models. And so, maybe said more simply, imagine a data model or an AI model that was created for which that the output of that model needs to be presented to the public, but the data model itself, the entity that created that data model, has a vested interest in preserving the privacy of it. And so think about the Department of Defense or other organizations that have very specific use cases around specific data models that need to be private. We can now do that. Blockchains can now support that endeavor. And the third would be authenticity verification. Blockchains can help validate the authenticity of images and text and video and other types of media, which heretofore couldn't be done. And that can be cryptographically verified to validate the authenticity of that content, to prove that it's valid in its creation, that it hasn't been modified, or that it has been modified. Because I think, again, end users want to know if that thing was created, is it in its original form, or was it something that was modified at some point thereafter? That's equally important for end user consumers to understand as well. So those are three areas that are enabled by blockchain. And the fourth, as I said at the outset, which may be more of an economic benefit, is that blockchain provides digital property rights, right? So when content is created today, how does one know who created that and whether they should be attributed with the creation of that content? And when you put that content on chain, you can now validate that that content was created by a certain individual or brand or whatever, and then they can be economically rewarded for that activity. So those are the four ways in which blockchains can help support the validity or the verification of content that lives across the proliferation of this content across the internet.
How accessible are those four things, though? Like, let's say it could be anyone from a news organization to someone who's just posting a TikTok. Maybe they're like an influencer. How accessible is it for them to access these things in order to protect their IP and et cetera?
Well, I think this is a good question for Melody, I think, because this is exactly what Verify is trying to do.
Yeah, I think that is right. I mean, we approach this from like a Fox perspective, but I think with the hypothesis that it's relevant for not only other news media brands of our size, but also for the really diverse set like information ecosystem today, from Substack writers to TikTok influencers to basically anyone who is an intermediary in some way between the public and like the information environment. And one of the kind of core hypotheses I think we have is that in an age of AI-generated media, the information space is going to, the zone will be flooded. And it's not necessarily always with, you know, malicious manipulation, but it's going to be very difficult, I think, and not really fair to impose upon every consumer that they're going to have to validate every piece of information themselves from first principles, right? Instead, I think increasingly, I think brands will be important. In the age of AI, the importance of brands is going to rise because consumers are going to rely on those brands to help them navigate this information space. And again, that brand could be a Fox or it could be a Substack writer. And there's a really diverse type here. And so we wanted to put out essentially an open source technology. It was the whole reason we open sourced it was to really think about adoption. And the reason we chose a technology like Polygon was to make it very low cost so that you can have anyone who's potentially putting out information into that space, you know, can take advantage of some of these primitives that Michael discussed to be able to both protect their content and also to, I think, open up very interesting monetization opportunities, which Michael began to allude to, that can be done with this original ownership, you know, this moment where you can say, I'm signing on chain that this piece of content originated with me. I think that really unlocks a lot of economic opportunity downstream. But fundamentally, we're trying to allow a publisher to be able to put out a piece of content so that a consumer can then say, okay, I trust Fox. Did this piece of content actually come from Fox? And was it not manipulated from when they published it? And that's the core things we're trying to solve with Verify. I mean, you could think about AI manipulation or how to tackle that problem in a few different ways. I think there's a lot of people are tackling it from like the question of like, was this AI generated? Or was this AI manipulated? I think the other way to think about it is, was it not tampered with from the moment it was published? And so that's where we can like rely on these cryptographic approaches with very high confidence, be able to say, okay, this image was signed by Fox on this date. It was signed within this, what we call the content graph, which is a smart contract on chain, which essentially binds an image to the headline, to the text. We think that context really matters. So much of the information, misinformation space right now is actually just images being taken out of context. Like, leave aside the fact that it's, you know, AI generated. But so you have a content graph, Fox publishes a piece of content. These four images were associated with this article headline, this article text. So now if a user is on Twitter and they see an image and they say, Fox reports X, and there's an image there, they can say, wait, did Fox actually report that? Is that a real image from Gaza? Is that a real image from Saudi Arabia, wherever the news is meant to take place? And I think what we see, and just we're going to spend some time on Twitter about what people say Fox published, these are things we've never said, right? And there's images that are being attributed to us inappropriately. And so now we think, okay, we're empowering users, like consumers, with the tools to actually be able to ask the question, did Fox say this or not? Like right now, before Verify, they really didn't have the ability to ask that question. But now you can go to verify.fox. You can like drag and drop an image. Like, yes, this perfectly matches. This was not tampered with. And by the way, Fox published this article and this image on this time in this context. So we did that for Fox. And that was important for us to go public with it first. We signed our first piece of content last August, which was actually what we consider the beginning of the election season, which was the first day of the first Republican debate on Fox. Right. And we were thinking about the elections, you know, as one of our North Stars. You know, but now like a Substack writer could do the same thing. And it's like, it allows any publisher, large or small, to be able to put that line in the sand. This is my piece of content. I stand behind it. And then consumers can say, well, if I trust that person, then I can inherit essentially the trust and trust that underlying asset.
Just add one thing. I think ultimately it'll be in the brand's best interest to proactively indicate that they are part of Verify and to indicate to their consumer that they are a trustworthy producer of content. We've seen this in other instances, in other areas of the internet where it's in the interest of a brand. That brand could be as large as Fox or as small as the individual content creator on TikTok who will say that I am part of this solution because now you can trust that what I'm doing is actually valid. So I think today it's increasingly becoming, through services like Verify, it'll be simpler for end users to understand where they're receiving their content from and whether that's actually valid or verified in some way. And it'll be the brand's best interest to proactively publish that, to indicate that to their end user that they're actually part of the same solution.
Right. What is brand's demand for this? What has the response been like since launching this? Are there hesitations? Are people kind of coming and saying, help? Where does it stand?
From a publisher perspective, there's kind of, again, we think about this as solving a consumer problem, which is this verification, but also this business problem about how we're being compensated for our content in these downstream use cases. And we really think this solves both problems. And I'll be honest, I think the one that feels more timely is this business problem that we kind of began with, which is how our large language model providers compensating publishers for their content and how can they move from a Napster model of taking the content to a verified model of taking content, again, that publishers stand behind. So that piece of it feels very pressing, I think, from a publisher community. And then everyone wants to do something about deepfakes. I think there's still a lot of technical debate about what the right approach is. We've obviously put a line in the sand around this provenance is the way to approach it. And there's some complementary initiatives too that even go further upstream than us that start, say, at the camera collection, right? And all the way from how a camera takes an image and then it goes through Photoshop and up. And we consider that all really interesting metadata to include in the protocol. But we've kind of started this moment of a publisher signs a piece of content. And that means something. That means that publisher is standing behind this, whatever that means to them. That from us, that means we have a newsroom, we have units that do research and put that out. If you're a Substack writer, again, you have a different process. But when you put out a piece of content, you're standing behind it. And that's a little scary. I think, when you put it on chain, it's tamper-proof. And that's one of the fundamental features of the system, right? Is that it can't be modified. But it's also, it's a little scary for a news organization. You kind of put out there this record. But generally, the reception has been quite good. It's meant today. It's like, okay, see how this can solve my business problem, where I can actually put out there and say, I own this content. So if it's been taken by this other company, it's like, here's a record, a tamper-proof record that I originated. And that means a lot.
Mike, what has it been like for you?
Yeah, we've seen interest from every facet of content creator today. And I think it even accelerated with the announcement of Verify. And as we've talked about, this is large and small brands alike. And when I say small brands, I mean every individual who creates content on the internet is thinking about how that content is attributed to them in a provable way. And when we think about it from the large brand perspective, is how do they demonstrate themselves to the world as having content that they have produced and owned and can validate the fact that they produce and own that content. And that, as Melody said, it wasn't tampered with. So we see every potential combination of content creator thinking about how to solve this problem. And when they come to us, we redirect them over to Melody to think about how to best integrate into their solution. And as she said, there are other upstream solutions like the C2PA, which is a standard for establishing the veracity of content at the hardware level, which complements what Melody's solution is trying to create. And I think we're getting to a place where, whether it be the picture that's produced from the camera or the brand that is creating text, video, and audio content and distributing that through whatever channel, those two worlds are coming together to deliver this, I think, the world that we're looking to see, which is one that we can trust. So yes, we see every facet of content creator looking for a solution today, and they're starting to rapidly adopt.
Great. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break before we get back into it. And now we are back, and I want to go back into the conversation we were having before, but kind of focusing more on looking to the future. Do you both think that articles, photographs, videos, creators, etc., are going to become more secure as technologies like this launch and proliferate, or will the risk of deepfakes and imposters technology also grow at the same rate and still have the potential to harm consumers? Basically.
I mean, my hypothesis would be that most of the information space is not going to be verified, right? You're going to have proliferation of content, and the content's obviously getting extremely good. And AI-generated content is extremely compelling. I think average consumers, or even non-average consumers, people who spend time in this space, have a hard time telling what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
So that's going to get really, really good. And it already is really good. It's just going to get better. And there's going to be these questions, I think, of things just, as we see today, are already out of context. You just take images out of context to advance a certain narrative. And people are out there trying to maliciously push narratives all the time. So I think that's kind of the headwinds that we as a, as an industry are facing. And like, well, what is the countervailing energy that we can put forward there, which I think is this sense of content that publishers, I mean that in like the really most diverse way possible,
yes,
stand behind content. And then I think as we think about some of these aggregators, that's where you're going to see the problem at scale. So if like the aggregators, like a large language model, are consuming verified content, then you can imagine like the models are going to be trained on real data that organizations are willing to stand behind. And that's where I think you'll really get the benefits downstream. Whereas if models continue to be trained on just the internet, and the internet is increasingly AI generated, you can kind of see how that becomes a bit of a death spiral, I think, of quality, where you're kind of training on AI generated stuff, which is training on AI. It's just, you can really see it going in a quite dystopian way. So I think it's really important for us to put forward this kind of like alternative path of content that you know, again, a wide variety of institutions are standing behind, which might mean there's still like a lot of difference of opinion, obviously. It's not meant to be like there's going to be the true source or the one truth of content that language is, I think, not feasible or really what anyone's asking for here. It's rather in a diverse information ecosystem, how can you allow organizations that are actually willing to put their name behind something and have that stamp or are proud to put their name behind pieces of content in the broadest way possible, put that into the information ecosystem, and then allow AI generation technologies to actually train upon that content, which I think that's where you really begin to see the scale into the future. And I think the alternatives could be a little bit bleak.
Mm. Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
I share the sentiment. I view this somewhat cynically in the sense that I think there are a lot of bad actors out there who are trying to subvert truth.
Right.
And we see this happening every single day, all the time. And I think AI enables that to happen at a scale which we've never seen. My skepticism, perhaps, is met with what we're seeing and what we're talking about here today, which is the opportunity that technologies that we're talking about will help solve this problem. I think Melody's right that the vast majority of content that consumers are receiving, that they're being bombarded with, will likely not be verified. And they're going to have a very difficult time assessing whether that content is something that they should rely upon or not. But increasingly so, and I think we were talking about this earlier, I think it's going to be in the vested interest of brands, large and small, to establish that what they're delivering is actually real, or as real as they can prove it to be. I think consumers will demand it. I think brands will require it. I think big tech will be forced into a position where they're going to have to adopt some standards. Otherwise, the government will get more deeply involved in setting those standards for them. And we know that big tech doesn't like that. So I think we have a multi-sided marketplace here of brands, large, brands, small, consumers, the government or governments globally, and this technology that all comes together in order to create an environment where we actually can solve this problem at some level of scale. I think we have to be diligent. I think the technology will continue to improve that allows us to scale this to the size of the internet. I think one of the big challenges from a blockchain perspective is the vast amount of content that's being created is unfathomable. And I think it's being generated at a pace at which, like we said, we've never seen and will continue to be generated even more rapidly as AI becomes more capable. And that's happening at a pace that we also haven't seen before. So I think we all have to work together in order to ensure that the technological environment that we're creating enables the scale to solve this problem at a pace at which, again, the end user consumer can effectively consume. From a user perspective, it has to be one that's simple. It has to be one that can ultimately give people the level of trust that they're desiring without the effort required for them to do the work themselves. And I think, again, what Verify is doing is will help do that, as other solutions will as well.
Aside from brands specifically, which areas of content or the internet do you both think are the most susceptible to harm right now and like are in dire need of a technology like this?
I think in the election season, people are very much eyes on the news, on news media. And I think particularly, you know, obviously the complex international environment now, people trying to navigate what's happening on the ground in these global conflicts, images coming out of those environments. How are they been potentially validated by news media organizations or not? I think that's, it feels like the most timely thing. But I'm sitting here in LA, like I think in Hollywood, there's obviously massive considerations also just for talent, how their name and like their likeness is being represented, you know, whether there's been who has consent and in what circumstance or to use underlying content to create new content. So these, I think these issues are all being navigated in real time. I think in news is where we're seeing it already happen at such scale, the manipulation. But I think with general, anything with talent and content, I think is maybe is a little bit behind, but everyone can see where it's going right now and how are, who has what consent rights and how do takedowns work? How do you adjudicate potential concerns? I think is like a very active area of like technical and legal exploration.
I'd say every type of content is susceptible today. And news is at the forefront. There's no question the news is at the forefront. We all rely on the news. Whatever we describe as news today, news can come from Fox, news can come from the armchair journalist, and every piece of content is susceptible to manipulation. Hence, I think as we enter into this presidential cycle and we live in a global environment, we're all receiving news from everywhere. We're bombarded with it. And hence, I think that is a primary place to start.
Yeah, as the U.S. elections are coming up in the fall, the major ones, obviously we have elections going on right now. What other ways do you two see blockchain and AI as complementary technologies to one another in combating misinformation, especially during election season?
Well, one thing Mike and I talked about, I think, is that by signing something on chain, you can't delete that, right? Like, you put a piece of information out there, you signed it. It has this potential to really establish this accountability, I think, which I think is very interesting as you think about a long tail of new brands, right, that are trying to build reputation. So if you're a Substack writer, right, and you're signing on chain, like all of these assertions over time, there's really a track record to evaluate you against. You can't just be deleting the tweets that didn't pan out the way you wanted or that you didn't do sufficient research around, right? Like, there is that record. So I think it's another interesting feature of on-chain provenance in this information landscape to really allow, again, emergent brands to be able to actually have a record to be evaluated against.
And given that the technology is open source, I think we're going to see some really interesting applications in terms of how it's used. We can't predict, I think, at this point, how far the technology will be used in order to solve these kinds of problems that we're talking about here today. I think what Melody just described, this idea of on-chain truth or on-chain, the provability of something on-chain, which cannot then be manipulated, perhaps will change behavior in and of itself in ways that we haven't yet discovered. As Melody said, if you can't delete the tweet, maybe you'll be more thoughtful about what you write. It's possible. We can only
hope,
right?
That you would hope.
I'm not convinced of anyone.
We're optimists, Mike. Yeah.
You know, I said I was a cynic and a skeptic, but I'm also optimistic about, hopefully, about humanity, that we can all be better. And again, I'll go back to my skeptical, cynical side. What anonymity has enabled on the internet is that people can say anything, anytime, anywhere about anyone in any way. It's almost like we've unfettered an individual's responsibility to the world, because you can do it with a veil, right? A cloak of privacy that people don't know who you are. And so you can do anything you want. And there should be a social contract where you can't just say anything you want at any time in any way that's provably untrue. I think what blockchain is, it will enable ultimately, is perhaps that maybe a resurrection of a social contract, where maybe you can prove that someone said something that was real or true, or can be proved that it wasn't real or true. And my hope is that if that's the case, then those who are trustworthy will be more thoughtful about what they say and what they do, because it has such significant impact on all of us, right? We are a global community, and something said on one side of the world impacts something that happens on the other side of the world, or something said in my community amongst my small group can impact others within my small group. So I'm hopeful that through technology and through maybe a resurrection of a social contract that can be delivered through the technologies that we're delivering, maybe we can make the world a better place. And ultimately, that's my hope.
Yeah. Amazing. I would love if we could end this on a note from you two about a piece of advice for our listeners regarding the whole conversation we had. What would be something you tell them to do, whether it's protecting themselves, not posting maybe the worst things online, or something else?
Well, I got one self-interested thing, which is I love, we're opening for feedback kind of on our approach and what we put out there, and really kind of hoping to bring on the community of builders. We've heard from developers, like, really interesting ideas for applications to build on the protocol, from, you know, a browser extension that could, like, superimpose, you know, whether we find confirmation, you know, on the protocol for images you see online, et cetera. So verifiedmedia.com is kind of where you can find it. And we have our whole GitHub repo is out there and our documentation. And so, yeah, I'd love to hear feedback from the community or hear from builders who are interested in potentially extending the technology or want new features on the technology. And I guess the other thing would be to experiment with some of these technologies that are out there now. Again, the verify.fox is kind of one application built on the protocol. Right now, you can actually take images you see attributed to Fox, like, see if they're matches, kind of interrogate that content graph. And I think it's the kind of new norms for consumer behavior that, you know, we might hope to see. And I think Mike's right, like, you know, is it a norm change, a behavior change a little bit that all of us are going to have to participate in, and how much is reasonable to expect of a consumer or not. And so we're kind of like navigating that, and really would love to hear feedback.
Great. Mike?
On my side, I'd say from a consumer perspective, my hope is that consumers demand this. And I think if they do, then what we're creating here will become even more prominent in this new technological age that we're finding ourselves in. And we can help solve that problem for them. If they don't demand it, then it's less likely to be solved. And I think, again, it's in our best interest to have big brands participate so that we can prove the world to be one that we understand and trust. So I would say the first piece of advice would be demand it. Demand from your brands that the content that they're delivering to you is something that you can rely upon. From a Polygon perspective, I'd say we are always interested in supporting builders in finding novel solutions to interesting problems. And the relationship between AI and blockchain is one that is coming to the fore. There's so many facets in this environment that the opportunities are abounding. So for those builders out there who are looking to solve novel problems in the AI space, and they believe that blockchain can be a supporter of that, we would love to hear from you and please reach out to us.
Awesome. All right, Melody and Mike, thank you so much for coming on today. It was an absolute pleasure. We'll be back next week with conversations around what's going on in the wild world of Web3 with top players in the crypto ecosystem. You can keep up with us on Spotify, Apple Music, or your favorite pod platform and subscribe to our companion newsletter, also called Chain Reaction. Links to the newsletter and stories we talked about can be found in our show notes, and be sure to follow us at @Chain_Reaction on Twitter. Chain Reaction is hosted by myself, Jacqueline Melanick, and produced by Maggie Stamets, with assistance from Yashad Kulkarni and editing by Kel. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, and Henry Picavet manages TechCrunch audio products. Thanks for listening in. See you next time.